All right. Good morning, everybody. It is kind of nice, actually, to be talking about a subject other than contact management, which has been the topic of my last two shows, or three shows, actually. Although I must say I have enjoyed the last three seminars on the subject of contact management a lot more than I thought I would, and judging by the registrations and the attendance, it really was a popular topic. Today, I am here in the Sell with Soul virtual studio with Molly Wasserman, who many of you have met here before on previous shows. Molly is the founder of the ACRE program, and ACRE stands for Accredited Consultant in Real Estate, which is a program I'm a big fan of, and I know that several of you are as well. We're not going to talk much about ACRE today, although I'm positive that the subject of real estate consulting will come up from time to time as we talk and answer questions, and I'm happy about that because I do think there's a place in our industry for real estate consulting. And I think that may be the direction that our industry is heading, but again, that's not the topic of our show today. The reason Molly is here with me, there's actually a few reasons Molly's here with me. First, I had some minor surgery yesterday, and I wasn't sure how I'd feel today or how many pain pills I'd be on, so I wanted to make sure that my guest for the show was someone who could carry the show on her own if I found myself incapable of doing so. And Molly definitely is capable of carrying the show with minimal input from me. But as you can tell by my voice, I'm actually feeling pretty good, so you may hear more from me than I had originally planned. We'll see. Also, Molly's here because although what we're going to talk about today is not really related to Molly's program, it is related to being a competent, intelligent, respectful real estate professional, which Molly and her program definitely represent, and as you know, is a hot button with me. Another reason that Molly's here is that we're going to talk about some things that come up during listing interviews, questions, concerns, and objections, and how to address the more common ones. Many of you have already heard my thoughts on the matter, my various solutions and strategies, so I wanted to bring on a fresh voice to answer them as well. And knowing that Molly's answers or responses or solutions may be different from mine, and that's fine, but Molly's a smart gal, and she has a deep passion for bringing more professionalism to the industry. So even if her responses and solutions conflict with mine, I'm not the least bit worried that I won't like them. So that said, here's the plan for today. We're going to get the ball rolling by bringing up some of the more common questions, concerns, and objections that we encounter when we're talking to sellers. And Molly and I will share our thoughts and ideas on how to get past them to the satisfaction of the seller. And that's important. Our goal here today is not to give you ridiculous scripts to memorize to, quote-unquote, bust objections or to beat your seller prospects into submission with your brilliant intelligence insulting dialogue, but rather to respectfully respond to what the seller wants to know because, please remember, home sellers don't do this every day, and they truly don't usually understand what's involved. Just because we've heard a specific objection or concern 100 times doesn't make it less valid when we hear it that 101st time. In fact, the way I see it, it makes it more valid because it's obviously a common concern, if that makes sense. I always tell agents to imagine how they would want a real estate agent to talk with their mother or their grandmother about listing their mom or grandma's home. And that's how to talk with their own seller prospects, with respect, with patience, and with empathy. So, Molly, do you have anything to add to that before we get started?
No, I think that was a really good introduction. And frankly, some of the responses, particularly around commissions and what do you charge and you charge too much and blah, 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 I will reflect my consulting mindset. But what I'd like, you know, one of the things that we say in the ACRE program all the time is that consulting is not about a fee schedule. It's about choices and transparency, and that dovetails, I think, very well with what you were describing in terms of treating the consumer with some respect and some logic and things that don't sound like they were a line that you learned at an office somewhere.
An objection buster, which I just absolutely hate, and especially when you think about selling your home, if any of you out there have ever sold your home with a real estate agent, you might have been surprised to find yourself with some of these same questions. And if your real estate agent busted your objection with some, you know, old cliched line, I don't know about you, but I would be pretty offended by that. So, you know, our sellers are not stupid. And when they ask a question, it's because they want to know an intelligent, logical answer. So that's what we're going to try to help you with today, is get over some of this objection-busting mentality and more of, okay, this is a valid question. How do we address it? So let me see if I have any issues on the webcast real quick before we dive in. And let's see. Dave Rutledge wants to know what ACRE stands for. Molly, I'll let you get that.
It's an accredited consultant in real estate. And consulting, although it's very common in our industry to just call yourself a consultant because it sounds better than saying you're a salesperson, the consulting is really a very different model. It's not just a gimmick or something you throw on your business card. It is a model that provides the consumer choices in both the services that they can receive as well as how those services can be paid for.
Cool. Okay. And here's another ACRE question. I'll just go ahead and throw this in here. Does the ACRE mindset work with the CDPE designation when you are in a heavy REO and short sale environment? I know that's been a topic of conversation on your forum lately. And again, this isn't a show about ACRE, but let's go ahead. Do you want to address that real quick?
I mean, certainly providing fee options and hourly consulting dovetails very well, and a lot of our ACRES are really exploring the REO market and seeing how it can be applied. The biggest problem we run into is the banks and trying to get past their objections to the traditional way of doing things. However, certainly providing the choices cannot hurt. And again, we keep stressing over and over, and this is just important. When we say we train our ACRES to provide options, commission is certainly one of those options. It's not instead of. It's one of the options that you can provide, and I can't stress that enough. So, yes, short sales, REOs, are a topic that a lot of ACRES are diving into. And frankly, as well as other areas. So I don't know if that.
Yeah, it's been interesting following now that there's a lot more membership there. It's been fun to follow. Okay, let's get back to listing interviews. All righty. Here's the first question, objection, concern that I want to address. When the seller says, I'd really like to hire you, or I'd really like to hire a real estate agent, but I just can't afford to, I need every penny I can get from my house. How would you respond to that, Molly?
Me? I think one of the first things that we need to do is to very gently help to educate the consumer as to what will allow them to get every penny out of their house. And frankly, you know, we know internally, but the public doesn't know, and this is why it has to be treated respectfully, that, you know, the getting every penny, it's what you walk away from after you leave the closing table that's going to be the ultimate barometer of the value that you get from your home. And clearly, having, good, clean, professional counsel will save you money. It will not cost you money. Now, again, I'm going to venture into say that because I come from the consulting model, I will offer them choices on how to get quality real estate assistance. But the bottom line is, for particularly on the fiduciary areas of pricing your home, valuing your home, negotiating, troubleshooting, you will get your most value by getting a professional. By the way, and this is an example I use in my new book, Jennifer, and you might remember it, where I talk about, let's say that you won the lottery. And I talk, by the way, tell sellers this all the time. Suppose that, lucky you win the lottery. My guess is that the thing you would do the next day after popping the champagne would be to hire yourself the best tax attorney you could get your hands on. And if they were the best, they would not come cheap. But you would gladly pay their hefty fee because you reason that whatever their fee is, it's going to be heavily eclipsed by what they save you from Uncle Sam.
Mm.
And, you know, and again, you know, we wouldn't even think about not getting a good professional to help us because we know we will net the most. So, again, it's not what you save, it's mm-hmm. what you net.
Well, and I think that's a good point, but it's almost more on ourselves, is do we believe that we earn our fee? do we believe that we're worth our fee? Because I used the same line of reasoning, and I meant it with all my heart, was I believed I could pay for myself. I believed at least I could pay for my half of the transaction, you know, because the buyer agent's getting the other half, but that I brought to the table at least my fee. And probably more, of course, that's a number you'll never know. You know, you'll never know what a seller could have gotten on their own. But I believed with all my heart that I brought that at least that much to the table. So when I was talking to a seller about that, I understand the concern. I mean, they're saying, okay, I have my house is worth $150,000. I owe $152,000 on it, or the other way around. You want to charge me $10,000, I don't have it. And, you know, I get that. And when I work with for sale by owners, I will say, you know, I can probably net you, you know, you will probably walk away from the table with at least the same amount of money as you could do for yourself, probably more. And I could explain why. I mean, and it wasn't just the fact that I have access to the MLS and I have a fancy lockbox. You know, I did have other things that I brought to the table. But I think if you just make that simple shift in their mind that you aren't just there as a luxury, you're not just there as somebody who needs the money and therefore because they have money to spare, they should hire you, but know that you actually do bring value to the table. And like your example of, you know, getting a good tax accountant, I know, you know, I have a very expensive accountant that cost me between $1,500 and $2,000 a year, and I have to fly to Denver to get my taxes done. Does he save me that much? Oh, my heavens, yes, he saved me $25,000 last year, you know, in something that, you know, I would have never known. So it's the internal conviction of I bring at least my fee to the table. And that's something all of us need to do some soul searching on, and well, do we? You know, do I bring that 2%, 3%, 5%, whatever it is you charge, do I bring that to the table? So, but I think most of us probably feel that we do. So that's a fairly, relatively simple objection to get over, but don't push it. You know, I mean, what I would say is, you know, I believe that I can pay for myself at least, and I can certainly reduce the hassle factor and the risk, but it's certainly up to you, Mr. Seller. You know, and I use a little bit of reverse psychology too. It's like, can you sell your home on your own? You probably can. You seem like a smart person. You know, you seem like an intelligent, competent person. You probably can sell your home on your own. You know, you'll just need to make the decision: is it worth having someone on your team who has done this before and probably can at least pay for themselves.
Also, the other thing that I just mentioned is when, you know, people say, well, you know, can I do without a realtor? And I'll say, you know, it's like saying, do I need fire insurance? Well, no, if you don't have a fire.
Good point.
You know, it is the things that you don't think may happen that may happen. And having somebody there who will quarterback the process, who's done this and knows what potholes to be looking out for.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, and so let's dig into this one a little bit deeper. I was going to move on, but I'm thinking, okay, we do have, let's say we have somebody with $150,000 property that it's worth that. They owe $150,000 on it. I mean, what do you say to somebody in that position that says, well, I can't afford you? And in their mind, they can't. I mean, and I get that.
Well, again, I'm going to venture into the benefits, I think, of practicing consulting and having some payment options. And, you know, that's how I would answer it, because I have those tools that I've developed in my toolbox that I can then pull out and say, let me explain to you what your options are that you can get. And again, this is not a show about consulting, but, again, to kind of reiterate, what we teach in consulting is that we provide Nordstrom. We give you lots of different ways to pay for Nordstrom. But in terms of the quality of the services you're going to receive from me, you will only get Nordstrom, because we know that Nordstrom is what's going to put the most in your pocket when all is said and done. Now, if you know, and then be able to offer them, you know, the choices. And this probably will go into a different question, but let's delve into this now. Because I have the toolbox full of other tools that I can offer them. I have the freedom to be able to be very honest and very transparent about what a commission is and what you, Mr. Seller, are paying for when you pay by commission. And, you know, when I explain to this, it absolutely sets me apart because they've never heard this from any other agent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No other agents are willing to even go there because it's the only thing that they can offer. So what and I don't do it in a value judgment way. I simply do it in let's talk very transparently about why commissions are what they are, why you and I will agree with them and play in very empathetic mode is that commission is a very expensive way to pay for real estate services. Why is it expensive? It's expensive because you are not simply paying for the services that I'm going to be giving you. The services are included. But the lion's share of what you are paying for when you pay by commission is risk mitigation, which is a fancy way to say you're paying to make sure you get your desired outcome. And if you don't get that desired outcome, the insurance that you pay nothing. But that insurance is expensive. So there's nothing wrong with paying by commission, but think about only paying your CPA if Uncle Sam is nice to you, or if you were to only pay your doctor if you get well. They would have to charge an incredible premium in order to be able to give you that guarantee, if they in fact offered it at all, which they don't.
Well, and this was the topic of the show Molly and I did last year, which it was a fantastic show. But the whole premise of a real estate commission is that you are working on contingency, therefore you can charge more for that. So when a seller says, what on earth am I getting for my $10,000, you're not going to do $10,000 worth of work. You can agree and say, you're right, I'm not going to do $10,000 worth of work, but I am agreeing to work on with no guarantee of payment. Now, if you want to pay me up front, you know, that $10,000 number is going to look very different because it's a guarantee. But anyway, that's not the subject of today, although it's a fascinating discussion, and it does help.
But I think that it's important to be able to say to the consumer who says, you know, I'm underwater, I don't have, and I can explain to them, I can provide you the services themselves, and you can pay for just the services that I provide, but like any other service provider, I will have to be paid regardless of the outcome of your home selling. Are you comfortable with that? And contrast that with getting a watered down discounted commission from somebody else. And I can, you know, very clearly give them that option. Now, most may not choose it. In fact, as I often joke, my mother wouldn't choose to pay by fee. She's very risk averse. She would only pay by commission. But once they understand what they're paying for, they don't try to commissionectomy you. And they are very comfortable because this is the first time somebody has explained to them clearly what a commission is and why we have to. It's the basic law of economics 101, high risk, high reward.
Right.
You want me to carry the risk? I have to be paid very well because it has to make up for all of the other transactions and time that I spend that I don't get paid for. Once they understand that, then they're free to choose what makes them feel most comfortable.
Well, the other way to address the, well, and this is another one of our objections we're going to get to, we might as well do that now, is, well, I need so much, you know, I need $150,000 just to break even, and you're telling me that my house is only worth $130,000. You know, what are we going to do about this? And, you know, again, the response to this comes from an internal conviction that, one, you're prepared. You know, you're prepared for your listing interview. You know what the value is, but also understanding that the seller, this is a valid concern for the seller. This is something that it hadn't really occurred to them that, oh, my goodness, I can't sell my house. I don't have the equity in it. What I do in that situation is I do a lot of reverse psychology, and I don't consider it manipulative. I think it helps the seller to not see me as a pushy salesperson that they have to argue with. So what I will do in that situation is I say, you know, I'm not seeing that here. I'm not seeing $150,000 here in these numbers. You know, sometimes I'll say if you've talked to somebody else and they think that they can get you, you know, that number, then I'm going to encourage you to go that direction because I don't think I can. If they showed you different comparables, if they showed you a different analysis that was more compelling than this one, again, this is what I think. If somebody else has a different opinion, you know, maybe they know something I don't. But I will also, you know, just very casually say, you know, I don't see those numbers here right now. That could change in 6 months. Would you like me to, you know, stay in touch with you between now and then? And, you know, if the market improves to the point that you can get the number you want, you know, we could reconvene them. And what I found that does, it doesn't, I mean, no one has ever pushed me out the door because I've said that. You know, it's they just, you know, realize I'm willing to hold my ground as a professional with integrity. And it sort of shifts their mindset to, okay, we have a problem. Let's find another way to deal with this besides increasing the price. And it can open a conversation, but they see you're not pushing them. You're not condescending to them. You're giving them an out, and very often that will bring them around to be more willing to talk about reality.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anything else to that, or do you just think that was the most brilliant thing you ever heard?
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
I thought that was, you know, and again, I think that there's two key points we're making on this whole discussion, and that is, number one, not condescending, but mm-hmm. talking to them with empathy and understanding. And on my end, providing transparency mm-hmm. in what they're paying for and without judgment and being able to say, this is what you're paying for. There are other options here. There are other options that aren't so hot. And we can talk about that in when we get into people who will work for less. And mm-hmm. I know that's a question coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, again, just this feeling of empathy and clarity and transparency is just key to dealing with seller objections.
Exactly. And, you know, remembering that they have the same objections that we would have, and if we wouldn't, our mother or our grandmother would. And so,
absolutely.
Yeah. And they're usually, I mean, 90% of the time, they're very reasonable questions and objections. And
frankly, and again, I'm not going to down the traditional real mm-hmm. estate industry and how they train us, but frankly, I'll let you do that. But again, think about this. If you've ever been through a real estate training course that they teach you how to deal with seller objections and you think that these responses are stupid, then what can you imagine the consumer mm-hmm. thinks?
Yeah.
If you think they're stupid, they're stupid.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the back of my new book that's coming out, the back of it says something about, well, anyway, it says trust your gut. I mean, that's a big theme of my new book is trust your gut. Because if something sounds ridiculous to you, if it sounds icky to you, if it sounds unpleasant to you, it's definitely sounding unpleasant to the person you're subjecting it to.
And frankly, one of the reasons that I've always so clicked with your philosophy, Jennifer, is that I think that I have been successful over the years in my own private real estate practice and now in the Yeager program because you treated the individual client with respect and treated them as you would have, the old golden rule, treating them as you would want to be treated. That got me more business.
Mm-hmm.
I may not have always been the cheapest. In fact, I rarely was, but I got my business because they believed I was being honest, transparent, and empathetic, and I wasn't giving them canned stuff.
It really is amazing how simple that ought to be, but it's not. Okay. Here's something you were alluding to a minute ago, and I'm going to give you my little spiel and then let you do yours because I think it's different from mine. But my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, my friend, my neighbor, whoever, will list the house much cheaper. Okay. What I would say in that, if somebody were to present me with that, I basically say, you know what, that's great. If you want to go that route, we'll still be friends. I'm certainly a fan of family loyalty, not to mention a fan of getting a great price, and I'm sure that person will do a great job for you. Let's go ahead and keep talking, and if what I share with you today is helpful in getting your home sold, whether you hire me or your sister-in-law, then I'll be happy, and then I continue on. I'm not going to beat up the sister-in-law. I'm not going to put down her services because I don't know. Maybe she's going to do a great job for less. As many of you know, I ran a discount company for a while, and I did a great job. And nobody could have said I didn't provide full service. It's possible to do, and people are doing it. So So, you know, you never want to criticize your competition because they are offering a lower fee than you're comfortable with. You can really just kind of get on by it. If they're going to hire based on, say, family loyalty, friend loyalty, or money, those things are perfectly reasonable. Those are perfectly reasonable factors to make a decision on, and I don't have any problem with it. But they've invited me there for a reason. Now, maybe it's just to grill me to get information, maybe. But usually, it's if you're there, you're there for a reason. And so, you know, don't get defensive, don't get snotty, don't get insulted. Just, you know, smile, acknowledge that they have choices, and you'll respect them no matter, you know, that they'll make the right decision for themselves and go on with your story. And I think that's really the best you can do. Molly?
Yeah, you're right. We're going to diverge a little bit. In fact, I have a chapter in my book called Why Discounting is No Bargain. I'm not a favor of cutting. On the other hand, I'm going to agree with you. If I was hit with the concept of with the thing that it was a sister-in-law, or because you don't know what their situation is, and it might be that they are, you know, a full charging agent typically, but they're giving a break because it's a family member. You don't know that, and it's never good to get into it. But I try to pull it out of that, and let's turn that to it's not a sister-in-law; it's the realtor down the street said she'd do it for a lot less, and that makes it a little bit cleaner because I want to kind of separate out.
That's good.
Family loyalty. And just say, you know, so-and-so down the street said that they would charge a lot less. And what I talk about, and I talk about this in my book, is, you know, the most important thing we do as good, smart consumers is we look at a product or services that we want to purchase, and we need to decide whether or not it's a commodity. And an example that I give is, you know, that, you know, my husband and two sons wear a certain brand X underwear, and I like this particular brand because it wears the best and blah, blah, blah. Brand X comes in a package of three, and it's available in a variety of outlets. Now, whether I buy that package of underwear at the most expensive department store in the mall or at the cheapest discount store I can find, the package of underwear is the same. It is a commodity, and therefore, I am going to shop it by price. Now, let me give you an example of something that's not a commodity, and that's when I go into the story about winning the lottery. You know, that is a professional service where the expertise and experience of the practitioner is going to make a big difference in your outcome. By dividing and thinking through, is what I'm wanting to obtain a commodity? If so, you are a very smart consumer and shopping it by price. But if it is a service where the expertise of the practitioner is going to make a big difference in your outcome, I wouldn't shop it by price.
Well, could you, combining your philosophy and mine, you wouldn't shop it by price. That doesn't mean that somebody else isn't going to do a good job for you, but that should not be the determining factor.
Absolutely.
You could kind of follow that up, not by saying, well, obviously, since they're cheap, they're no good. But
I would probably follow that up with a thing that says that there are, you know, wonderful attorneys who will give a break on their services, you know, to a friend or a family member.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean the quality of their services are any less.
Mm-hmm.
But that, again, you know, you're trying to keep apples and apples together, that if something is priced however it's priced, that it needs to be judged on the quality of the service, not on the price of the product, because the price.
See, I think you can shift or refocus their attention away from the price.
Absolutely.
You know, and you can't, you know, not to the point of, because, I mean, there may be somebody more expensive than you. Do you want them going to them because they're more expensive? Or, you know, someone to use that argument, well, I'm, you know, much more expensive, therefore I'm better. And clearly we know in the real estate industry you don't always get what you pay for. So that's one of my fears of using that argument, is because there are so many real estate agents out there who charge what we would call a full price, and they're not worth any of it.
Absolutely.
So,
and,
you know,
I think
so if you could kind of, you know, use it and then say, you know, make your determination on the big picture, not you know, not just what, the price.
Exactly. And what you pay is not as important as what you are going to end up with, what you net, you know.
Okay.
And I think that that's a judgment in terms of somebody's services and,
okay,
you know, and providing the quality that you need. Make a judgment on what you're going to be getting.
Okay. Let's shift away from commissions and pricing here for a minute to something that I know comes up with a lot of newer agents and then even some agents who are trying to break into to different markets. How do you respond to someone who says, you know, how much experience do you have? How much experience do you have listing homes in my neighborhood, in this price range, or, you know, just in general, how much experience do you have?
How do you usually handle that? Why don't you take it first?
Okay. Well, in my experience, and just basically common sense, the more prepared you are when you show up for a listing interview, the less likely this question is going to come up. So if you show up at an interview and you sound as if you've been in every house in the neighborhood, you know the flow of the neighborhood, you can speak intelligently about it. I mean, let's say this is, we're talking about someone who wants to know how much you've done in the neighborhood or a particular price range. Let's say you're trying to break into a higher price range. The more knowledgeable you sound, the less likely it is that they're going to have really any questions about it. If the seller, I mean, let's say that you come in and you've been in every house in the neighborhood because you've been out previewing, you've been studying the MLS, you've really done your homework, you're prepared, and so the seller is impressed with that, but they still, you know, they still want to know, they still press you on the question, you really can confidently tell the truth that you haven't done a lot of work in this particular neighborhood or price range, but, you know, you are willing to, you know, break your backside to learn everything you possibly can about it, that, you know, once you've mastered the art of learning a particular neighborhood or price range, that that's a skill that's very transferable as you go into new neighborhoods and price range. Now, if they want the neighborhood expert, then they want the neighborhood expert. But if you come in and you are professional and calm and not defensive and not insulted again by the question, then, you know, they probably are not going to push it. It's not going to be a 15-minute conversation. I know when I listed a house of mine out in the country, you know, I was interested in whether or not my agent had ever sold a house out in the country as opposed to in town. And, you know, she was able to kind of toss out a few tidbits here and there in our conversation that told me that she was familiar with wells and septic systems and, you know, a creek that ran through the property, things like that, and I was perfectly comfortable with that.
I'm going to add a little to that,
mm-hmm.
and I have a lot of experience in, you know, going on a listing appointment where it's not specifically my neighborhood. And when that happens, and I can say this, and it is my belief. Now, there will be people that disagree with me, but I don't believe that having the neighborhood agent is as much of a leg up as it was 30, 40 years ago. And this is why. We're a very mobile society. And, you know, because of that mobility, you know, 30 years ago, if you lived in a small town, your buyer would be likely to be in that same small town. Today, because of the internet, you don't know where your buyer is coming from. They could
Good
be
point.
From your town, but more likely they could be from California. They could be from Japan. You don't know. So what you need in a good listing broker is somebody who can get the word out.
Good
and
point.
It is up to the buyer agent who is representing the buyer to make sure that they understand that neighborhood and where schools are located and where this is located and where that is. But that is not as much in my mind as important in a listing agent. A listing agent needs to know how to market your home and get the word out to as many possible buyers as possible. And, you know, and I believe that. Now,
well,
are there specific things that you need to know about the neighborhood to effectively market the house? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of how fast your home is going to sell because you have the neighborhood agent versus
mm-hmm.
somebody who is not from the neighborhood, I just don't think that that adds up like it used to.
I think you're right, although I will say that if you're truly out of your element, and I would say this applies more to property type more so than perhaps neighborhood or price range, but, you know, I would never in a million years list a commercial property or a farm and ranch or anything like that. So, you know, if you get all revved up because someone calls and says they have a $10 million, you know, strip mall they want to sell and you're a residential agent, I don't think there's any level of preparation you can do in time for that listing appointment.
Are you crazy?
No. I mean, that's the kind of thing where you admit that you're out of your league and you probably don't even show up. But in general, I think if you are prepared and also, you know, the advent of buyer agency, which probably most people on this call weren't even aware, that there was a time when there wasn't buyer agency. But, the buyer is going to come from somebody else more than likely, not from you. So, you know, being the neighborhood specialist or the neighborhood hotshot is not, as you say, not as important.
And again, frankly, I'm going to reiterate that, and I do this to sellers, is that you need to separate out the finding of the buyer versus once the buyer is found, how to negotiate, troubleshoot that transaction so that you end up walking away from the closing table with the most in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, and I've told sellers this, the most important thing you can choose your listing agent is not the stuff that they're going to do to get the buyer, although it's certainly important to know how to market properly,
mm-hmm.
but the most important and valuable value that that agent can bring to you is the fiduciary counsel and care to take care of your best interests throughout the transaction.
That's a good point, too. And that, you know, not one agent, there's probably not one agent on the planet who is going to ring every single bell on if you made a list of the 100 things you want in a listing agent, there's probably not one who's going to ring all those bells. And so, you know, how many bells do they ring and which are the more important ones? Okay, here's a good one. And I don't know if this happens to a lot of people, but I hear that it does. When you're talking to them and you're talking about the process of getting the house on the market, putting the house on the market, and the seller says, "We want to be home for all showings in case the buyers have questions."
And how do you answer that, Jennifer?
Okay. Well, I nip this one in the bud. I am not going to go into a long explanation. I'm not going to get into a deep discussion. I'm going to say it's better if you're not. Let's let the buyer discover the home on her own. If she has questions, her agent will let us know, and if they want, you can be here for the second showing. And then I move on as if the discussion is closed. It's not going to happen on my watch, and when you have that internal conviction that it ain't going to happen in your listing, the seller will usually go for it. But let's say that they don't. Let's say that they persist. Then you can say something like, you know, we want the buyer to fall in love with your home. And she's not likely to do that if you're here. If she likes the home, she'll be okay if some of her questions aren't answered right away. In fact, it can even help build on the excitement if she has to wait a little while for answers, and that puts us in a better negotiating position.
I am continue to be amazed at how much our responses are very similar, given that we have very individual thought processes. But that's exactly how I would always answer those questions. Very matter of fact. They are hiring me or interviewing me because I'm an expert in what I do. And I explain very matter-of-factly that let's keep our eye on the goal. And the eye on the goal is to get your home sold for the most money possible.
Well, and it's just, so many agents get wishy-washy on this because they don't want to upset the seller and they don't want to, you know, they don't want to get in an argument about it, and I am not going to get into an argument about it. It's just so – I feel so strongly about this. It's probably in my top five things I feel affect the saleability of a home is whether or not the seller is going to be home for showings. And because I have that conviction, I'm going to tell them no, respectfully. I'm going to explain very briefly why, and then we're moving on. We have other things
to talk
about.
Absolutely.
Which
I think that's
is very powerful. So – how about related to that, and this may, in some markets, this may be the norm. I know in Chicago I think it is, but we want you to attend all showings. Or, Molly, will you be attending all showings?
And my answer is no, I will not be attending first showings. But, again, I come from an area that lockboxes are the thing. We do not have company showings. You know, and I will point out, and, again, this just dovetails on the last question, that – the buyer feels most comfortable, and we want them to feel comfortable in your home, and they will feel most comfortable if they have the comfort level of being able to not only walk through your home, but discuss it with their agent confidentially. And if I am standing there or in presence, it's going to mute their, and it's also going to cut down on the amount of time we know that they will spend in your home, and we don't want that. So highly recommend that we let people see your home, and if they want to come back for a second showing, I am happy to be there and answer any questions that they or their agent have. But again, we want to make sure that they have reason to want to come back and hopefully put in an offer. And we will get that mostly by making sure that they have the privacy.
And I think that's it's such a good point to get across, that it really is in the seller's best interest for us not to be there and for, you know, for them not to be there, as opposed to, well, I just don't want to, or, you know, we don't want you there. It really is by far in their best interest. I have a few more questions here that I had lined up, but I think we have enough on the webcast now to go ahead, and so we're going to get to wing these. How about that? You ready? Let's see what we have. We don't have a ton, but let's see. I've got a couple people saying, and I, let's not talk about this right now, but saying, you know, there's no way my office is going to allow me to offer consulting, you know, consulting fees. But that's...
Can I just really quickly
sure.
say that the vast majority of our newest ACRE enrollees are actually brokers.
Hmm.
The industry is absolutely coming around. And while your particular office, you may think that they usually say, no, you can never do that, because they don't understand what it is we're offering and the skills that we are teaching. So, again, just put it in the back burner. But
I did it. I did somewhat, as some of you know, I did somewhat of a consulting model without, well, it wasn't really consulting, but it was an upfront payment model that I did for a while. Now, I was with REMAX at a time it was 100% company, and so, you know, what I charged was completely my business. Nobody had anything to do with it. But I did, you know, I would charge an upfront fee in exchange for a reduction in commission, and my sellers loved it. If, you know, they paid me $500 upfront, and for that I would reduce the listing side of my commission, and they loved it. And I was able to do that, and that may be something, you know, that's...
And think about this, too. We regularly... will get paid for BPOs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a big stretch to eventually say, well, if we're going to get paid for a BPO, why can't we offer the option of providing a fee for a market analysis that's not tied up with you interviewing for a job?
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that will – the world is changing, and again, I'm going to remind all of the listeners that in the early to mid-1990s, nobody could ever have believed that buyer agency would become the standard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember because Colorado was one of the very first states to implement it, and I came in right, I mean, like the year buyer agency was introduced in Colorado, and to hear the older agents talk, it was just crazy, and it was, how are we ever going to function, you know, without having, you know, without sub-agency, which is, for the newer people, it meant that every single person in that real estate transaction represented the seller. Even the person working for the buyer represented the seller, which to those of us that have come in the industry in the last 10 or 15 years, it just is like, I don't
Hello?
See how that
what?
Could possibly have worked, but that's the way it was.
And
so,
buyer agency, and I'll just point out, the reason that buyer agency came about against the kicking and screaming of many of the more traditional agents and brokers was because it was consumer-led and consumer-driven.
Right,
consumer
right.
wanted to have their own representation when they bought as well as when they sold. And buyer agency was demanded, and it became a reality. In the same way, I believe that the consumer is demanding choices. They may choose commissions, but they are choosing the commission because it is the best, not because it's the only. And that's the only thing I would answer on that one.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, Sandy has a question. All right. Sandy says, when competing for a listing and the other agent is inflating their value of the house to get to the listing, what do you say? How do you compete with that? I don't play games. I show real comps, and I get to the value multiple ways. However, the seller is going to want to use the other agent because they think they will get more for their home. I don't want to say negative things about the other agent. I don't think that's right to do. What do you do to get the listing?
Interesting.
Yeah, we kind of covered that a little bit, but I'll go ahead and respond, and I'll let you, because a lot of you have already heard my thing, but I'll say it real quick, it's very difficult to compete against that because, again, put yourself in the seller's shoes. Let's say you were selling your house. One agent tells you it's worth $350. The other agent tells you it's worth $450. Who do you think likes your house better? You know, the one who says $450, you're going to very naturally want to believe them. That's a very human. I mean, that's what you're going to want to do. We all would, and we all think that the person who's saying $350 is a meanie. You know, and our industry does not have this reputation for fair play and even competence in a lot of cases. So we think, well, that person who's saying $450 must know some. I mean, they must be the better agent because they can get more money for their house, and that is the way that a lot of people are going to think, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's wrong, but so you won't always be able to combat that, and it is, as I've said in past shows, a viable marketing strategy to overprice your listings and get lots of listings. It is a viable strategy. It's not one that I would sleep well at night, and I know when I've had listings that don't sell, I'm miserable. So it's not a strategy that would work for me because I can't do that. And I'm guessing if you're asking the questions, you can't do it either. Will you get all of those listings? No, you won't. But the more conviction you have that your numbers are right, the more prepared you are, which it sounds like you are, you know, that confidence and that conviction will make itself clear to the seller. Again, you can use some somewhat reverse psychology of saying, you know, I'm not seeing that here. My numbers aren't showing that. You know, if you'd like to share with me the other agent's market analysis, I can see if maybe I missed something. Typically, that other agent didn't do a market analysis. Okay, so you're very sweetly pointing out that the other agent maybe wasn't as prepared as you are. And, you know, you don't have to say, well, the other agent's an idiot. I mean, maybe the other agent does know something you don't. Not likely. Maybe they do, though. So, you know, if you can say, well, if they can support that number, you know, I'm happy to look at it and see if I missed something here. I don't think I did.
I think it's really important to just say in a very matter-of-fact way that the value of a home is not based on what the agent thinks. The value of the home is based on what comparables have sold for, period.
Mm-hmm.
This is what the numbers that I've been able to come up with say, that there is, and if they bring it up, and I don't usually bring it up, but if they bring up, well, so-and-so said my house is worth so much more, and I'll just say, you know, it's a good idea to get several opinions. If you find one that is way off from the others, you know, you might want to question what numbers they're using, what comparables they're using. And I think that your idea of suggesting that you could look at the other broker's numbers is a great idea.
Okay, yeah. Now, you know, I mean, again, you're not going to get them all. And that's perfectly okay, knowing that there are people out there. I mean, there's always going to be unscrupulous people out there who are going to get business, and they're going to take business away from you.
But what goes around comes around.
And, huh?
What goes around comes around.
It does. It does. But we all know those people out there that they do perfectly well, and they sleep at night, and I don't know how, but it doesn't work for me. So I got to come up with another plan. Okay. Okay, now the questions are coming in. Like I said, they start pouring in around 20 till. Okay, Sarah has a good question. Is it a good idea to mention that a client's house might be easier or more difficult to sell based on location or style and then maybe consider a difference in commission based on that? I've never done it, but maybe as a professional we can see these factors based on our experience in the business of real estate. Also, I've had clients object to a $75,000 or $80 commission on the luxury property, and to be honest, I think that commission amount is too high. How do we explain commissions this high? I love that second part of the question. Love it, love it, love it.
You know what my answer is going to be on that.
I don't actually, but let's see. So we
you know, I mean, again, this is mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I think the mm-hmm. commission system is based mm-hmm. on basing it on the price of the house. is not a very good barometer of the value of the services that they're going to receive. We know that we can list an $80,000 condo and put in a heck of a lot more work because you have to deal with condo associations and blah, 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 blah. And frankly, when you get to the high end, I don't care how many luxury property magazines you've put the house in, you are probably going to make one heck of a load of money that would be way, way up and above what would be considered fair for what the work you put in. You know, again, this again gets into the theory of the commission, and it has been the traditional way we've been paid. But, you know, again, by being very transparent about what a commission is and why it's being paid, and, you know, again, being able to offer alternatives, if you can, you can get around that very clearly and still get paid extremely well for the time that, and the work that you put in.
Well, those of you, I'm going to say, for those of you who are in, who are members of Club SWS, that's the $10 a month thing that I, the subscription plan, this month, the last interview I did with Molly from last June is on there, and we talk about this issue fairly extensively. I thought it was a fascinating discussion, but so if you're a member of Club SWS, that interview is on in the archives this month. But the first question, which was, can, you know, I charge different amounts based on the degree of difficulty of the property? Sure. I don't have any problem with that. I really don't. I think that's an intelligent way to market your services. And maybe there are things, there are some agents who, you know, well, if you do A, B, and C to get your house ready, I might charge you less because you're making my job easier. You're making the house, you know, more marketable. Although I would venture to say I would want my sellers to do those things anyway if I'm going to take the listing. But sure, if you see a property is going to be difficult to market and you don't, there's nothing you can really do to fix that if it's on a busy road or it's overimproved for a neighborhood or something like that, I don't have any problem with you taking a look at that on an individual basis and professionally saying, this is what I'm willing to do this for. I don't think you have to even have your own quote-unquote standard fee. You know, you can have different fees for different sorts of properties for different situations. I don't have any problem with that if your broker doesn't. As far as, you know, making an $80,000 commission on a luxury house, this is, again, we talked about this in the last interview or the last show, and it was my response to that is if it doesn't make sense to you, there's something wrong with it. And the example I used in that situation is I had a friend who sold houses in Aspen, and so she regularly charged commissions that range and higher. And I said, how do you get away with that? How do these? And her answer was fascinating to me. She didn't try to tell me how expensive her advertising was. She didn't try to tell me how much risk she was taking on by putting her sign in a very expensive yard. She said, rich people don't mind paying for services, and they don't complain. That was her answer. And she was being very transparent with me in that I don't know if it makes sense or not, but they don't complain, and that's the way it's done. And that, to me, was very telling. It's like, okay, there isn't a good answer. I don't care how expensive a property is. When I watch this million-dollar real estate show, whatever, million-dollar listing, and these, sorry, but these kids are getting these $150,000 commissions for being incompetent, as far as I can tell, those aren't justified. They're not, I mean, you know, and the people say, well, it's more expensive to live in Beverly Hills. Well, you know, there are plumbers and firemen who live in Beverly Hills who are not making $80,000 on, you know, on one job. So anyway, if you're feeling uncomfortable with an $80,000 commission, that's probably, there's probably a reason for that. And not because you're not any good, obviously, but because there's something wrong with that structure. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I would just add to that
I'm in favor of absolutely, changing your fees based on the situation. Again, I think that a non-contingent fee makes more sense to people than adjusting your commission, but that's just me.
Okay. All right. Ruth Marie has a good comment, and I think I'm going to agree with this a lot. Aren't you potentially running into trouble if you don't know the details of a neighborhood? For example, we have a neighborhood where a beautiful golf course extends people's backyards into a huge vista, and it's a big perk. Unless you are very local or very aware of surrounding communities, you would not know that the golf course that was sold, and blah, blah, blah. So it has all of these, you know, so basically if you're not the neighborhood expert, you could get yourself in trouble by not knowing about certain things coming up. And I agree with that, and I do. I think there is value in being familiar with a neighborhood, and I do, you know, I was a neighborhood specialist in a few neighborhoods in Denver, and I did feel that I was the best man for the job because of that. I think it's a balance.
I agree also. I think the example that I was referring to earlier was when it's pretty much a cookie-cutter neighborhood, and you're
mm-hmm.
talking about who could attract the most buyers, and I think
mm-hmm.
that was more what I was referring to then. Clearly, neighborhoods have their own stories to tell, and the more familiar you are, the better you're going to be in being able to represent the house properly. But again, I was more referring to ability to bring in potential buyers.
Well, and I think a lot of that's going to depend on your market. I worked in a historic home market, and the suburban agents who came in very often did not know what they were doing, either
right.
as listing agents or buyer's agents. And I did feel that, you know, you should hire a city realtor as opposed to, you know, a suburban one to get the most out of your experience. But, okay, here's a good one. I don't really know how to answer this one, so I'll let you do. How does one get over the objection of being from a firm that is considered too high-end or luxurious? Sellers actually believe my brokerage won't handle the sale of their home because we are a luxury brand.
So nice to be on the upper end.
Yeah.
Have it be that way, then,
mm-hmm.
oh, you come from the other side of the tracks and you're not
mm-hmm.
good enough. I mean, again, you know, marketing homes is marketing homes, and you either have a talent and you can certainly express how you market homes, and really it comes down to, you know, appreciating. It's not necessarily whether you would appreciate it. A luxury home is not useful to somebody who doesn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of your expertise in marketing a home is marketing it to the people that would most likely find it attractive. And that is transferable.
Well, but I think if you know, I know in Denver there are certain brokerages that have that kind of, you know, that aura of luxury, and I think if you choose to go to work for one of those, you may be off-putting to some of, I mean, it may be, you know, and
it
they
goes
may
back
walk
to what
into
you
your
said.
Office, you know, in Cherry Creek. They may walk into your office in Cherry Creek and feel intimidated. Well, you know,
then you're not the right agent for them.
Then you may not be the right agent. Now, if you don't come across like that, you know, if you don't come across as, you know, snooty, and not that, you know, luxury proper places are snooty, but you, I mean, I think that's the implication here. If you come across as a nice, normal, you know, average Joe kind of person who, you know, happens to work at a luxury brokerage, I don't think that's going to come up as much as you would be afraid it would. And a lot of, you know, marketing, well, you know what, I'm going to back off of that, because I worked at my very first office was in the foothills of Denver, and it was, you know, a Genesee office, which those of you familiar with Denver, Genesee is an expensive neighborhood. And so coming down into the city, which is where I wanted to work, I did feel a little bit of resistance to that. And frankly, I didn't want to work in Genesee. It wasn't my market, so I came down into the city and worked. But I think if you come across as a real person and you have your own marketing plan in place, that most people are going to be okay with that.
And I just want to point out, Jennifer, that it mm-hmm. really comes down to something that you said so beautifully at the beginning of this call, and mm-hmm. that's to be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you are working for an office that, for better or for worse, is considered snooty and you just don't feel comfortable because that's
mm-hmm.
not who you are, then I'd say maybe
mm-hmm.
you're not at the right brokerage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the questions we get all the time. It's that I believe in the consulting model of providing choices, but my broker won't let me do it. You know, first try to bring your broker around, and if they won't, then really think about, if this is what you believe in, and this is what you feel comfortable doing, then you need to align yourself in an office
mm-hmm.
that shares that.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple. Be true to yourself.
Okay. We have a lot more good questions here. They're really interesting. Thank you all for the good questions. Anthony in Austin says, regarding the listing agent being present for showings, what about in the case where you're certain the buyer's agent is not experienced, or they're out of their geographic area, or you know that the agent does not work that price range or with that specific type of property? For example, the nuances between production homes and a custom home.
I
think if
I was just going to say that if I know in advance that it's an agent that is not experienced in my area or the home or the neighborhood or just really doesn't know what they're doing, for whatever reason, I would just always contact the buyer's agent prior to the showing and say, I see that you're showing this home. Would you like for me to be present? And, you know, and it's a nice way of, and most of the time they're so relieved, oh, could you please, you know, and frankly, you know, I know that that I would feel better if somebody at least offered. But it really is in the buyer agent's hands because, frankly, they may not know as much about the home as you, the listing agent, does, but they have a knowledge that is more important, and that is they know the buyer. They know what to say, what not to say. A lot of listing agents have just shot themselves in the foot because they talk about this beautiful pool and cabana, and the buyer's agent is cringing because they wouldn't have emphasized that since their buyers hate water. I mean, I'm using a ridiculous
example. But they have small children or something.
Again, I would always, you know, if you feel that the buyer agent just doesn't have the knowledge base that they really should, then, you know, nicely put in their lap. But remember, it's their client, and they know their buyer, and they will know. And believe me, they want to sell the house, too, if it's right for their buyer. So put it in their lap.
Mm-hmm.
They'll let you know.
Good answer. I still probably wouldn't, unless it was a property that was unique. I mean, truly unique. Then, I might offer, but I think I would still, you know, it really is between the buyer. And the problem is, I think if you're showing up with the intention of helping, you're going to get in the way. You know, if you know, just can truly show up and stay on the front porch, you know, and stay out of the way in case they have questions, but it's so hard to do that.
It is hard. And the other thing that I did a lot in my real estate career, Jennifer, and if it was a high-end home, I would do it on high-end paper, but I would put little notes around the house.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I would do it on high-end stationery if it was a high-end home,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, take note of the, you know, and the sellers often thought it was cute, but the bottom line is if there was important features that really should be pointed out, point them out.
Well, it kind of comes back to the whole thing about the, you know, the sellers being there. Either the buyer is going to like the house or they're not. And, you know, your being there isn't going to make the decision for them. You know, if they walk in and they like the house and they want to know more, then you'll have that opportunity. If they walk in and they don't like the house, nothing their agent's going to say is going to make a difference. Nothing you say is going to make a difference. So,
But if there's a unique feature,
mm-hmm.
then
oh,
I
yeah.
would be afraid to, you know, point it out without you being there.
Exactly. Okay, here's a good question from Sarah talking about double ending, and I have lots of opinions on this too. Let's see. Can you please address the issue where agents tell a seller that they will reduce the commission if they bring a buyer, and that appears to entice some sellers enough to hire them with the hope that the listing agent will bring the buyer and therefore a reduction in commission? I won't do it. This is another thing I nip in the bud. I'm not going to do it. I think that's an easy one to explain because basically it's a built-in disincentive for you, the listing agent, to not market the property to buyers and to show any buyers that come off of your marketing another house. You know, I'm sorry, but, you know, if I'm going to get $500 for showing the buyer your house and I'm going to get $6,000 for showing them the house down the street, I don't feel bad telling my seller I'm going to be awfully motivated to show them a different house, and I don't want to build that in to my commission structure. I don't want that temptation. And so, no, I will not do that. That's what I think.
And, again, that depends on what area you're in. Believe it or not, there are still many areas where buyer agency still is not as, thoroughly entrenched in the culture as it is up here. But, I'm like you. I believe that every agent should have their own every client, buyer, or seller should have their own representation. And, frankly, I always just point out, you know, in the numbers and statistically, how few, you know, that's a great, you know, great thing to throw out with the fishing hook. But the bottom line is, you know, most agents do not come through the listing agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just a very small percentage.
Well, and I think you can sort of, you know, use the philosophy that I was saying and saying, well, it is somewhat of a, you can respectfully say it's somewhat of a gimmick because really what has that other agent done? They've incented themselves, if that's a word, to not sell your home, you know, to show their buyers another home, because a hot buyer in your hand is worth X amount of dollars.
Absolutely.
And, you know, who's – I'm – especially in today's market, I'm not going to stub my nose at a $5,000 swing in my paycheck. You know, it's just not right. So let's see. Lisa wants to know – I try to get the listing while I'm there for the presentation, but what's a good way to approach it when the homeowner says they want to interview other agents?
I encourage it.
I do too.
But again, I have a lot of confidence that the more agents that they interview, the better I'm going to look.
Mm-hmm.
And I just very, very openly say what I believe, which is, you know, I think that the more knowledge that you gain, the better it is. You know, it's very important for you to shop around and to get that comfort level, and please do interview other agents.
Well, and I would say, Lisa, you know, if you're saying I try to get the listing while I'm there, you may be putting an uncomfortable amount of pressure both on yourself and on the seller. Is, you know, don't approach the listing interview as a presentation or as a sales pitch. Approach it as a conversation where both of you are deciding if you're a good fit. And when you approach it with that attitude, you don't feel like you have to get a signature on a piece of paper that day. I could probably count on one hand the number of times I walked out of my listing interview with a signed listing, and I've almost always got the listing. You know, it's the lack of pressure, the lack of desperation, and I'm not saying you sound desperate. It's just, if somebody's trying to get me to sign something sitting at the table with them, when I want to talk to other people, I want to, I owe it to myself, I'm going to push back. And so, you know, go in with a completely different, you know, you're there to talk and to see if you can help. And if you go in with that attitude, and I don't even bring listing paperwork with me to my first meetings. I know that's a lot of people do, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't even bring it because I don't intend to get the listing that night.
This is why I love you so much, Jennifer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, frankly, this is just so counter to what many of us have been taught, and it's the old traditional sell, 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 and get that signature on the paper. You know what? I've had so many agents tell me that when they pushed and got a signature on the paper, they regretted it. They had seller's remorse because they didn't feel comfortable. You are a professional. You are not there to hawk them.
Exactly.
And again, have confidence in yourself. And frankly, I always go on the other premise, and I will tell a seller, as well as I tell any buyer that I work with, that this is a relationship that is going to be based on trust and on comfort level. And you need to find the person that you feel comfortable with and you feel that you trust. And
that's so funny. I say the same thing as, you know, when they say, well, I'm interviewing five different other agents, and you know, do you have any advice for me on how to pick one? And I say, you know, they're probably, most of them, good. Just pick the one you feel the most comfortable with and you think has the most enthusiasm for your home, and I think you'll be fine. And that seems to go over well. Okay. I am going to get to, wow, we have not lost anybody. Can you believe that? I have one more question here, then let's go ahead and get to our little fun game at the end, and then if we want to take a few more questions, we can. Sangeeta, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, has a question about for sale by owners, and I don't know the answer to this. Do you know of any data from the MLS that can be shown to a for sale by owner to list with you, something he could see that would impact the sale of the home if he does not market it with an agent? Are there any statistics in an MLS? I'm guessing there's not, since most for sale by owners aren't in the MLS. I know NAR had some statistic of, I don't know, you get 15% more, 85% more, some number, which I really honestly don't know where that would come from.
I would love to address this question because I am familiar with the lack of hard data.
Mm-hmm.
And because I, you know, one of the chapters in my book is the unrepresented seller, or better known as the for sale by owner. And in writing the chapter, you know, I searched and searched and searched to try to find objective evidence outside of NAR, which is obviously self-serving, as to, and the only thing that I could find was from USA Today, which dated back, I think, to 2003, for God's sake. It was the only non-NAR statistics that I could find. And one of the things that I question in my chapter is all of these for sale by owner companies, if there was hard evidence of how for sale by owners can do just as well as represented sellers, then don't you think they would be touting it? Don't you think that they would be
doing their own studies?
They would be doing their own studies. Why has none of them commissioned a study? And, you know, it just, unfortunately, there's just not a lot of hard evidence. You know, I would recommend that you read through that chapter in my book, because at least it gives you some arguments to think about or have the seller think about. That's all.
Well, you know, there's a chapter in my new book too. While we're talking about our books, in my new book that's not out yet, about for sale by owners, and I don't know that that's the most effective way to get buy-in from a for sale by owner is to say, well, you know, so and so says that you'll net so much more percent, but from listing, you know, with an agent, especially if we can't prove it, then that's probably
it's tough.
But there are other far more compelling arguments, if you want to call them that, not arguments really, but persuasions, to encourage a for sale by owner to want to hire you. And I'm not going to go into those today. It's not a for sale by owner show, although it's a fascinating topic. But, you know, I'll just say that keep in mind what the goal of a for sale by owner is. It's to sell their home and maximize their sales price. If you can demonstrate that you can do that, not just by saying, well, in general, real estate agents get more money, because that's not real compelling as far as for them to hire you. It doesn't really build any rapport between the two of you. It just somewhat insults his intelligence for trying to do it himself. But if you can demonstrate both with your words, your tone, your body language, your confidence, that you can get the job done and you can get that seller more money for his home than he can get himself, he's willing to listen to you. He doesn't hate real estate agents. He hates the idea of paying a fee that he doesn't feel is worth it. And in many cases, what we charge, we are not worth, because a lot of real estate agents are incompetent. So, again, I talk about this more in my book. Just the attitude of going in with, I want to help, I can help, I have the ability to help you. I really can. And, yes, there's a fee associated with that, but I'm well worth it, and as opposed to, you know, a bunch of scare tactics and, you know, throwing out a bunch of data and that we apparently can't support. So to answer your basic question, no, I don't think there is such a thing, and any numbers that you see are probably not very accurate. Okay, Rosalind has, let's see, this is a good comment. Your answer regarding the reduction of commission if the listing agent brings the buyer surprised me. I think my job is to place the seller's needs above my commission. I don't. I mean, to put my seller's needs above my commission, I mean, it depends on what you mean by that. I understand what you're saying, but, I mean, it would certainly serve your seller better if you didn't charge anything. So if what she's saying is she doesn't like my answer, which is fine, that I do not reduce my commission when I double into sale. Because that's not serving my seller. And I think it is serving my seller. I sold their house. I found the buyer. I negotiated it. I got it to closing. So the fact that they're paying me as opposed to somebody else is not hurting them.
I comment on that?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, this comes up a lot. And, Rosalind, it's a valid, and I talk about this all the time when I'm talking about you know, the different ways that we can be paid. But it just blows me away that our state and national associations have put us in the bind of, on one hand, we are told that our highest level is as a fiduciary, which I believe we are, and that we are charged with not selling the product, but that our focus should be on providing objective fiduciary counsel that is in the best interest of our client and putting their needs above our own. And yet,
yeah,
we're
right.
Paid to move the product. It's a disconnect. And
you're right.
I will say that the vast majority of real estate professionals that I've worked with through my career have been good people, and they do routinely put the needs of their client above all else. But I have to tell you, they're doing so in spite of the system, not because of it. That it just makes no logical sense, and frankly, it's making less and less logical sense to the consumer, which is why I think we're low on the trust scale as professions go. But that's my own comment.
Good point. No, I think that's brilliant, and it's probably a topic we could cover for a long time. All right. Molly, anything to add before we sign off?
No, I love doing these shows with you, Jennifer. It's always great to be able to share information that is real and true and honest rather than the gobbledygook we've been getting. And it's been a lot of fun.
It is, and we will see each other in Gatlinburg this summer, it sounds like, so maybe.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, everybody, thanks for coming today, and we appreciate your questions, your attendance, and go ahead, enter to win the book, and you'll be hearing from me tomorrow. So thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful weekend. Thanks, Molly. I'll talk to you later.
Take care, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.